Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, part two of the moral argument. For many more resources, go to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been looking at the moral argument for the existence of God. And the first premise that we looked at last week was that if God does not exist, then objective moral values do not exist. Where objective values means values that are valid and binding independently of whether any human person believes in them or not. And I suggested that this is a premise that really resonates with a lot of people today, particularly young people, because it is this sort of moral relativism that has been inculcated into them at the primary and secondary level in our public school system. And I think George Wright was reflecting on this kind of relativism in the morning sermon today. The sort of relativism that says that there is no moral absolute. What's true for you may not be true for me. And that in the absence of God, in the absence of a sort of transcendent ground of moral value, there isn't really any objective morality. Rather, moral values are just the byproducts of sociological and biological development. We saw that on the atheistic or naturalistic worldview, human beings are just animals, relatively advanced primates, and animals are not moral agents. So that if there is no God, it seems very plausible that in fact objective moral values do not exist. Now, some philosophers are unwilling to embrace the sort of moral chaos that would result from affirming that there are no objective moral values and duties. That leads immediately to moral anarchy, where everybody does what is right in his own eyes, and would mean that rape and murder and torture and so forth could not be morally condemned. And so these philosophers will try to maintain the existence of objective moral values even in the absence of God. They will typically pick something like, say, human beings to be the locus or the foundation of moral values, and will say that whatever contributes to, say, the flourishing of human beings or to the greatest happiness of the greatest number of people or to human prosperity, that is what is morally good, so that there are objective moral values in the absence of God. And that would be an example of, say, a humanistic point of view. Humanists are not moral relativists. Humanists believe that human beings are the foundation of absolute moral value, and man is the measure of all things rather than God. But the problem with these attempts to salvage objective morality in the absence of God is that these thinkers are typically at a loss to justify their starting point. If you ask them, well, why think that human beings are the foundation of moral values? After all, on an atheistic view, they're just animals. They're just relatively advanced primates. Why think that human beings are the basis of moral values? Or why should human flourishing be the absolute good rather than the flourishing of some other animal species? To say that human flourishing is the absolute good is to be guilty of speciesism, sort of like racism, being in favor of your own species as somehow standing out as special and peculiar. And in the absence of God, it's hard to see any reason to think that the herd morality that is being evolved among Homo sapiens is objective and valid. So that these thinkers, though they try to preserve an objective morality in the absence of God, are typically speechless when it comes to justifying their starting point. And that's where we need to press them on this. In the absence of God, why think that whatever their starting point is for objective morality is in fact the true basis? And just as an illustration of this sort of response, I wanted to read the response of Walter Sinnott Armstrong from this book, God, A Debate Between a Christian and an Atheist, which is the transcript of the debate that I had with Walter Sinnott Armstrong at Dartmouth College. Now, You need to understand that Synod Armstrong is himself a professor of ethics. So it's not as though this man is speaking outside his area of specialization. On the contrary, he is a specialist in ethical and moral theory. And this is what he has to say in response to this premise that if God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. He says, Craig next asks, if God did not forbid rape, what makes rape immoral, objectively? This question is supposed to be hard for atheists to answer, because Craig seems to assume that on the atheistic view, what makes rape wrong is some cost to the rape or to society. Now, I don't think I make that assumption at all, but that's what he thinks. He says, but the atheist can give a better answer. What makes rape immoral is that rape harms the victim in terrible ways. The victim feels pain, loses freedom, is subordinated, and so on. These harms are not justified by any benefits to anyone. Craig still might ask, what's immoral about causing serious harms to other people without justification? I mean, animals do this all the time, right? If you look at the animal kingdom, forcible sexual copulation goes on all the time in the animal kingdom. And so Craig might say, well, what's immoral about causing serious harms to other people without justification? But now, he says, it seems natural to answer, it simply is, objectively. Don't you agree? And that's his answer. So you see that when it comes to justifying his own starting point, all he can just say, it is just wrong. It just is. There isn't any explanation why it's wrong on the atheistic worldview. There isn't any foundation for the moral values. It just is objectively wrong. And he says, don't you agree? Well, of course, yes, I agree. I do agree that rape is objectively morally wrong. But as a theist, I have a basis for that in my Christian worldview, in the existence of God, who transcends society and culture and biological evolution. But the question is, if that God does not exist, then on the atheistic view, why would rape be morally, objectively wrong? And I don't think he has an answer, frankly. Yes, George? I think I just took out my bookmark. Okay, let me just get it here. I think I know where it is. This is page 34 in the book, God, A Debate Between a Christian and an Atheist, page 34. Any question? Well, let me go on and say something more about this before taking questions. So what we need to ask ourselves then about this first premise is there some sort of foundation for moral values that could be given if God does not exist? Some atheists have suggested that maybe there could be some kind of a non-divine transcendent ground for moral values. And I'm going to call this point of view atheistic moral realism. Atheistic moral realism. On atheistic moral realism, moral values are not grounded in God. Rather, they just exist as sort of abstract entities. Moral values don't have any further foundation. They're not really grounded in anything. They just exist. They're just real. So moral values like mercy, justice, loyalty, compassion, these somehow just exist without any foundation in God. Now, what might we say by way of response to atheistic moral realism? Well, in the first place, I have to confess quite sincerely that I find it difficult to even comprehend this view. I really don't understand what it means to say that the value justice exists. I mean, I understand what it means to say a person is just. I understand what it means to say some action is just. But I draw a complete blank when somebody says that in the absence of any persons or actions, justice just exists as a sort of abstract moral value. So, to my mind at least, I don't even understand really what atheistic moral realism is asserting here. To me, it's incomprehensible. I don't know what it means to say that a moral value just exists in the absence of any persons or actions that would have the property in question. But secondly, I also think that the nature of moral duty or moral obligation is incompatible with atheistic moral realism. Let's suppose for the sake of arguments that the argument that moral values like mercy, justice, love, forbearance, and so on just exist. Now, how does that result in any moral obligation for me? Who or what imposes upon me the duty to be loving, compassionate, forbearing, merciful, and so forth? How does just the existence of these abstract values result in any sort of moral duty or obligation for me to live in a certain way? I mean, after all, on this view, there are presumably other sorts of abstract objects that exist, like greed, rapacity, cruelty, selfishness. Those would also exist too as abstract values. What obligates me to align my life with one set of these abstractions rather than with a different set of abstractions? Why am I morally obligated to align my lifestyle with loyalty, compassion, fairness, and so forth, rather than with greed, selfishness, cruelty, and so forth? It seems to me that there isn't any basis for moral duty or moral obligation on this point of view. And in contrast again with this, the person who believes in God can make sense of moral obligations because we believe that our moral duties are constituted by God's commands. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You shall not murder. You shall not steal. And in virtue of these divine commandments, we have moral duties and obligations to live in a certain way. But in the absence of any divine commandment, in the absence of any divine lawgiver, I just don't see any grounds at all for moral obligation or moral duty, even given the existence of these abstractions called moral values. Third point, by way of critique, that I want to make of atheistic moral realism is that it is fantastically improbable that just that sort of creatures would emerge from the blind evolutionary process that would correspond to these abstractly existing moral values and principles. I mean, when you think about this, this is absolutely incredible that this blind naturalistic evolutionary process should produce just that type of creature that is in line with this system of objectively existing abstract moral values like fairness, love, goodness, kindness, and so forth. This is really totally, totally improbable. It's almost as though the moral realm knew that these creatures were coming. But of course, it cannot know on an atheistic view. But by contrast, on the view that God exists, both the moral realm and the natural realm are under the sovereignty of God, so that God can develop just those sorts of creatures which will correspond to objectively existing moral values and duties and so forth. The moral realm and the natural realm are both under the sovereignty and control of God. Whereas on atheism, the natural realm and the moral realm fall apart. They are independent of each other. And therefore, it would be utterly improbable that these two realms by accident would just happen to mesh in producing by the blind evolutionary process that type of creature to whom these moral values and duties would correspond and be applicable. So for these three reasons, I am quite persuaded that atheistic moral realism just doesn't make sense, and that therefore in the absence of God, it really is the case that objective moral values would not exist. Everything would be socioculturally relative. All right, any question about this first point, this first premise? Hubert.
I was going to share a story putting real life situation. I was down last year at the gay pride parade doing evangelism, and I met a girl whose cause was she goes around and their organization is against circumcision.
Oh, yeah.
And we swapped email addresses, and so I had this ongoing theological debate online with this girl that lasted over a year. And when we got to these points where she thought there was no absolute excuse for circumcising children, and I tried to explain, you know, we went through the existence of God, all these things, but one of the things I wrote her is, you know, Genghis Khan lived an extremely successful life. In other words, he made, you know, he plundered billions of dollars. He reproduced, he had over 100 children. He lived to be quite, you know, pretty old for the, he was in his 70s. And he passed away. He lived an extremely successful life. And yet, you know, he was a horrible murderer, massacre. But if you don't believe in God, then he was a very successful, he would be someone to strive to be like, because he was so successful. And so, you know, I tried to reason with her, and she just would never, I could never get her to recognize it.
Did she believe that there are objective moral values then?
She,
no circumcision, that's wrong, that's objectively wrong?
She couldn't, as you're explaining here, there was no logic behind, she just said that they just are.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense. It was exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, what you've got to do here, with respect to this first premise, is just keep asking why. If they say, well, it's wrong to hurt people, well, why? And this doesn't need to be an antagonistic question, but just why, on an atheistic view, is it wrong for members of the Homo sapiens to inflict pain on each other? I mean, animals do this all the time. And on your view, we're just animals, right? And they say, well, no, the human beings are special in some way. Well, why does that invest them with moral value? Just keep asking the why question. And there's no stopping point for atheism. Ultimately, they just run out of reasons, and you finally get the sort of answer like Walter Sinnott Armstrong. Well, it just is. Don't you agree? And that's it. Any other comment on this first premise? Yes, Wayne?
As she said earlier, it's your definition of is.
It is, yeah. Okay, well, we're talking here about an objective is. All right, any other? Yes, Scotty?
I relate the his comment to the arguments in creation, and he should be one of those people who has bumper stickers that says stuff happens, because just because it is, it's not a scholarly answer at all, but somewhere in between his argument and your argument, is it morally right for some of us to have all of the freedoms that we exercise in Let's go back for a moment and say we're living in biblical times. Is it right that some of us have all of the freedoms to exercise our lives and others don't? Because at the time these arguments were couched, they were non-persons. And in some parts of the country, of the world today, that's still true. It's in the Middle East. Get rid of your daughter if you choose to, or your wife. Mm-hmm. It's not morally objectionable then. But there's no voice given by God during that time about women having the same freedoms that men had. They were, the moral issue there was that women were non-persons and men yeah. around the world.
Well, now, I think it's very important here that we not get distracted from the issue that's before us. The issue here is, if God does not exist, do objective moral values exist? And what you've said doesn't in any way challenge the truth of that premise. I mean, what you're asking there are questions about biblical morality and the kinds of moral commandments, say, that God gave in the Old Testament. But even for the atheist to condemn those, say, for the atheist to say, oh, the biblical God is chauvinistic or things of that sort, he's still presupposing an absolute standard of moral value in order to make those kind of judgments. And so those kind of objections don't cut any mustard against this argument. Now, I think there's still important questions to raise and to talk about. I would really disagree very strongly that in the Hebrew religion, women are regarded as non-persons. I think that's quite wrong. But in any case, I mean, even if that were true, it just doesn't do anything to undercut the truth of this premise. What that would lead you to deny was maybe that the Christian God is the true God. You might say, well, I guess it's some other God then that is the foundation of moral value rather than the Christian God. But that wouldn't deny the first premise that if there isn't a God of some sort, that morality then everything becomes relative. And you can say nothing to condemn the enslavement of women or the brutalization of people down through history because there isn't any sort of standard by which you can do that.
It's not addressed during the time of Christ, though, as being a moral issue. It seems to me that women...
Oh, well, now, okay, but wait a minute, though, Scotty, but you're missing my point here, though. Again, what I'm saying is that as interesting and important as this issue is, it doesn't say anything that's relevant to the issue that's on the table before us. Because, I mean, even if you're right, all that would show us is that, well, the God that is the basis for moral values must not be the God of the Bible. But see, it doesn't challenge the premise that in the absence of God there are no objective moral values. Do you see that you need to have some kind of transcendent basis for the morality that you assume? You don't see that?
No, it just it strikes me that this moral issue that I can relate to in the biblical times
yeah.
applied to one sex but not the other, because you used the term rape as disdainable, morally disdainable, but it would appear to me that during that period of time, when so much was being addressed as to what is right, what is wrong, what was being recorded that we believe in now, was overlooked. I guess what I'm saying is, if a woman was abused and raped in the year zero,
yeah,
it wasn't as big an issue as it is today. Today we find it very repugnant, but apparently back then it was not, and it was more.
Now, to me, that actually supports the first premise then, that if God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. It's a result of human conditioning, and back in zero BC, this wasn't thought to be so serious mm-hmm. as it is today. So that would support the first premise, that moral values in the absence of God are just the result of sociological factors. Right? So unless you have some kind of transcendent foundation to saying, for example, rape is wrong, then it's just going to differ from society to society and culture to culture. Now, the other question is, that is not relevant to this, but is a different question that is interesting. Does the Bible have something to say about rape? And I think if you do a Bible study on this, you'll find that the Old Testament condemns rape unequivocally. It by no means treats this lightly. It says that it's sin and that people who do it will be punished. And it lays out the punishments for rapists. Indeed, any kind of sexual intercourse outside of the marriage relationship is regarded as sinful, both in the Old and the New Testament. whether it's consensual or not. So clearly in the Bible this is regarded as sinful. But that's not the issue, though, that we're talking about now. What we're talking about now is, if there isn't a God to condemn, say, rape, then is rape objectively morally wrong? And my argument is, I can't see why it would be on atheism, because on atheism we're just animals, and this kind of thing is done by animals all the time, and animals aren't moral agents. Animals don't do things for which they are guilty or for which they are to be morally praised, because animals aren't moral agents. Okay, any other comment on... Yeah, right here.
I was just going to ask, what if you're confronting someone who has an apathetic point of view, feels that we've just been bamboozled and there is no moral rule?
Well, I think this argument is one of the best ones for confronting an apathetic person. Because it's very easy to be apathetic about, say, the scientific evidence for the beginning of the universe or the fine-tuning of the universe for intelligent life, but it's impossible to be apathetic about whether objective moral values exist. Because every day you live, you make moral decisions which will reveal whether or not you believe that God exists by how you behave. If you live as though God does not exist, then you will live a life of moral anarchy and chaos and just doing anything that you want. But if you believe that certain things really are right and wrong, then by your behavior you are admitting that God exists, even if you deny it with your lips. So this argument really touches people, I think, where they live. If you're going to say that I'm an atheist, and therefore I don't believe that there are any moral values, you're agreeing with the first premise. Now, the question will be, when we get to the second premise, can you really live that way, as though there are no objective moral values? Can you really live as though it would be all right for someone to break into your house and steal your stereo and run off with your automobile, and you would say, yeah, that's just fine, there's nothing wrong with that. That will be the real question. And I don't think people can live that way, but that's the second point that we haven't got to yet. Yes, you want to follow up?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I can see the person I want to confront, they would just say, well, due to the pressures of society and repetition,
yes,
it would just, that's the fact of life and society. It's not actually moral.
Right. Obvious. That supports my first premise. See, don't be sidetracked by these side issues. What you just expressed is supportive of the first premise. If God does not exist, then, as you put it, moral values are just the result of social pressures and the need to get along in society. Remember what Bertrand Russell said about the herd morality? The herd imposes its values on the individual to get the individual to conform to the mores of the herd. That's exactly what moral values are. So, as I say, this is what people have been taught in school. And so very often when they think they're offering an objection to your view, they're really supporting it. You know, like what you just said or what Scotty said. You know, those are actually supportive of this first premise.
Okay, so you're saying like the fact that there's social pressures, that's supporting it?
Yeah. If that's all, if there is no God, then moral values are just a result of social pressures. And we could also say biological pressures too. Right. Yeah. There's no, remember, objective means that they are valid and binding independently of whether anybody believes in them or not. But if they're just the result of social pressures, then they're not objective. So what I'm trying to help you to see is that most of the kind of responses, and I hear these all the time from folks to this premise, this argument, really support you if you're maintaining this. So when people say, well, I think morality is just a social contract, that people kind of got together and they said, well, you know, if I won't steal from you, then you don't steal from me. If I don't murder, then you don't murder me. We'll all get along. That's what morality is. I say, yeah, that's absolutely right. If God does not exist, that's all it is. And the person who wants to go out and murder and steal, the psychopath or the pedophile, is doing nothing more serious than acting unsociably. He's like the person who wears white socks with a tuxedo, you know? But that's not morality. See, there's no moral significance to that. He's just unsociable. Yeah. Okay, yes, this fella in the salmon-colored shirt.
The salmon?
Well, okay, I guess it's a little sort of red and yellow. Okay, blurs together.
If somebody says they don't believe in objective moral values, then, you know, ask them how they would feel if you punched them in the face.
Yeah,
because
right.
You may be able to come up with your own conscience, and you can placate your own conscience, but everybody has a judicial sentiment that, you know, I may be able to justify what other people do to each other, or maybe even what I do to somebody, but if somebody does it to me,
yes,
then I inherently realize there is such a thing as objective moral value.
Yeah.
Because I don't want people to punch me in the face.
Right.
You know, so...
And that it would really be wrong if that other person did that to you.
Exactly. So anybody who says that they... don't believe it. Well, punch him in the face.
Well, no, don't do that. Don't do that. But you could use the illustration. We're actually getting ahead of ourselves. See, what you're jumping to is premise two. Objective moral values do exist. But I think that's the obvious next step in the argument. The way I came upon this, I used to give a talk on university campuses on the absurdity of life without God. And all I would argue was that if there is no God, then ultimately life has no value, meaning, or purpose. It was totally negative talk, just really depressing. And the response I started getting from students was, but look, certain things really are right. Love is really good. Certain things really are wrong. Well, now that didn't refute anything that I was saying, because I was arguing if God does not exist, then there aren't objective values. Instead, what I saw was the students were supplying the missing premise in a moral argument for the existence of God. I was saying, if God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. The students were saying, but objective moral values do exist. And what follows from that is, therefore, God exists. And that's, you can see how your immediate response, you know, was the same thing. And I do think that your method of arguing for premise two is quite right. And if I might share a true story, one of my friends, it was Steve Evans, teaches philosophy on a secular university campus. And one of the students in his intro to philosophy class turned in for his term paper that semester a paper in which he argued that there are no objective moral values and duties, that everything is relative. And my philosopher friend wrote on the front of the paper, F, in big letters, and turned it back in. Well, this student was furious. I mean, this was a very lengthy, well-documented, well-written, well-researched paper. It was a substantive piece of work. And he came into Steve's office and said, how dare you give me an F like this? This is a good piece of work. How can you give me an F? And Steve said, well, you handed it in a blue notebook. And I don't like blue notebooks. And the student said, well, you can't do that. That's not fair. That's not just. And Steve said, no, isn't this the paper that argues that there are no such things as fairness and justice? And the student said, yeah, that's the one. And then, you know, then he suddenly got the point, you know, that he was himself, by his moral reaction, showing he really did believe in the objectivity of fairness and justice and so forth. And so my friend then changed the grade to an A and turned the paper back to the student. But I think the student learned more through that experience than through actually writing the paper. But that, as I say, is getting ahead to premise two, where we'll argue that objective moral values do exist, which then implies that God exists. But is there any last question on premise one before we close our class today, that if there is no God, then everything is relative or subjective? You've already asked a question, so let me see if there's somebody else. Yeah, George.
How do you respond to a utilitarian approach?
Yes.
Saying that utilitarianism does provide objective moral value.
Yeah. The utilitarian says that you don't need God to have objective morality. Rather, what is objectively good, or what is your moral duty, is to bring about the greatest happiness to the greatest number of people. Now, I admit you could develop a nice moral theory on that basis, but what I would say is go back and question the starting point. Why is it that bringing about the greatest happiness for human beings is the good, rather than bringing about the greatest happiness for the greatest number of mosquitoes, you know, or the greatest happiness for the greatest number of cattle. Why Homo sapiens? And that's where I find these utilitarians cannot justify their starting point. They will simply begin with the assumption that human beings have intrinsic moral value and that therefore promoting the flourishing of human beings is the good. But if you go back to the starting point and say, why human beings? Why is their flourishing and their happiness the good? They typically don't have any answer to that. It's just the assumption of their theory, and then they work it out from that assumption. But what I think I want to do is question that assumption.
Another objection is that it's impossible to calculate the greatest good.
Yes, that's a good objection to the theory in terms of its practical outworking, is that you can't calculate what would bring about the greatest good to the greatest number of people. But I want to attack it even more fundamentally than that, and to say the whole basis of the theory is suspect in that it gratuitously assumes, that is to say, it assumes without justification, that human flourishing and happiness is identical with the good. And on a naturalistic, atheistic view, I don't see any reason to think that this little tiny evanescent species down there on that speck of dust called planet Earth, lost in this huge cosmos, should be invested with that kind of objective moral value and goodness. So, what we'll do next time then is turn to premise two and argue that objective moral values do exist, and then look at some objections to basing morality in God from the Euthyphro argument. So, we'll see you next week.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.